Hey there, it's Dr. Heidi. You're listening to It's Not Normal, It's Toxic, a podcast geared towards the things you may be misunderstanding about the difficult relationships in your life. I did not understand it when I was in it, but I definitely understand it now, and I want to share that understanding with you so that you too can find the courage you didn't know you had to make the changes you didn't think you could make. Welcome back for this second in the series of my journey through the eyes of the man who loves me. Okay, so we've talked about how we met, and that's so fun, and I love that story, and you could tell it 90 times. But how, you know, how did it go when I actually was able to move to St. Louis? And that's kind of a story in itself. I could not find a way to sell my half of the practice or to get him to buy me out or for me to buy him out. And mostly that was because he was never going to allow that. And so I really, and I think that you felt like this too, I really started thinking, I don't know how I'm ever going to get out of here, because one, I had two daughters. I couldn't really leave. There was no custody agreement signed other than 50-50. So there was nobody accountable for when we could have them and when we couldn't. So I really felt like, again, here I am, and this is just going to be my life. And there was an event that happened at a rodeo, and my mom and dad were at the rodeo, and I headed back, and I did not want to go back to that practice. And St. Louis was halfway home, and I stopped to talk to you. And I believe this to be how it went. My mom called you and told you to not let me go back, because if I didn't know that I had support, I would never get out of there. So when I stopped in St. Louis, I stayed, basically. Mm-hmm. And that was horrible. I bawled. I cried for 2 weeks because my patient schedule was full that day, and all my friends were up there. I knew that's where my kids were, and I just didn't go. I just didn't go back.
Yeah, but the financial handcuffs are pretty darn significant. And I know folks probably know what I'm talking about, but you were directionless. You were like, okay, I'm going to do this, but how the hell am I going to make a living?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? You know, beyond the kid thing and the affairs up there, even if you just walked away from every single ounce of it, you were still kind of directionless. And I just remember, just me personally, it was hard for you to compute that it didn't matter. I got you. And you're so damn proud. Well, I'm not living off of you. And this is, and I'm like, you're too smart. You're going to start new. We'll figure that part of it out. And you're such a worker bee. I knew that wasn't going to be an issue, but the financial handcuffs, yeah. That's tough.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and I've had clients that have done this, and I've had clients that I've been able to prevent from doing this, but I honestly could not think about, you know, going back to court over the kids or trying to get half of the money. I couldn't fight one more day. And so, you know, you and I kind of agreed. And again, this poor guy's been dating me long distance for a year thinking, oh my gosh, is this ever going to happen? I may as well just, you know, and we kind of agreed. I had my accountant meet me, and I just signed my former over basically everything.
Yep.
And 2 weeks later, you showed up with a U-Haul.
Yep.
And we loaded all my stuff, and I moved to St. Louis without a job and without patients and without kids and without money.
And two storage units full of shit.
Yeah. Two storage units full of shit that
I couldn't talk you into letting go.
Well, and I had that talk because, you know, I had been isolated from my family. I couldn't have friends. I had to quit all my hobbies because they were too invasive. And so I really got attached to my stuff, and I really got to where I decorated the house, and I got attached to my wardrobe, which I still
am. That was your thing, though, decorating.
Yeah, decorating and my clothes. And so everything that I still had, I just couldn't fathom leaving, because I had just given up 13 years of hard work and all the income I had ever established, any retirement I'd had, all of that. And so I was hanging on to stuff that I'm sure him looking at it, he was probably like, why are we getting rid of this? You know, the only thing that I did want that disappeared in the move, I had a box full of Birkenstocks.
Oh, thank God you lost those.
And he can't stand the look of Birkenstock. Anyway, I tease him about it. I think it actually just ended up in the Goodwill pile. But, we tease about that. But he's right. I was so attached to my stuff because I felt like I had lost so much. So we put it in storage because he had a little 3-bedroom, one bath.
Ranch home, yep.
And I paid $85 a month.
Can I quick tell a quick story?
You can tell.
So when I met you, no, I didn't meet you yet. I saw you. I sent my dad to the auction for this house that I was interested in, that was right up the road from this farm I was renting.
Anyway, but that was the same. That was before you saw me.
Correct.
Right.
So he was at the auction. I was headed north. And I saw you, and after the deal, he called me and he says, well, you got the house. And I said, Pops, I don't think it's going to be big enough. And he said, what? What's that supposed to mean? I said, I just seen a gal up here. I'm pretty sure she's going to be moving in. And I just don't know if it's going to be big enough. And he just laughed, and I laughed. And that was that. I had no idea that it was serious.
Do you guys remember that he said, maybe I'm arrogant because I never... He hadn't even met me yet, and he told his dad. That's so funny. But
it's not going to be big enough, Dad. That was funny. Because it was just me and Addie, and it was a perfect spot for us, right. You know?
But we look back at all those funny things that happened, and I don't know. We were meant to be. We were just waiting to find each other, I guess. But yeah, so I moved down and I didn't really have a job. And at the time, I will tell you, I was not going to practice chiropractic. I felt like I was a good chiropractor, but I had been told so often that I couldn't adjust and I was not a businesswoman to run a practice and there's no way I'd make it on my own. And there's no way that relationship is ever going to sustain and you're going to be back. And I was so scared to even start anything for the fear of failing that I was just really on the fence. And I moved down, and of course, I didn't have my kids. And I no more moved in with you, and your job sent you on the road every week for 6 months. So here I'm sitting down in this little town. I don't know anybody. I don't have a job. I don't have the kids. I don't have friends. And I remember just thinking, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. But in reality, it was probably the perfect thing.
Yeah, and it did force me because I did find some, and I found some friends.
You did, but you could soak on your own. It's not that I wasn't a phone call away, but you could soak on your own without completely leaning on me for every bit of fun, every bit of direction. You really figured some stuff out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, now, and again, I'm trying to relate kind of what I was going through, so the listeners that go through this know. There was a lot of, I'm just going to say infidelity. There was just a lot of other women in communication with my former all the time. So of course that insecurity still loves to rear its head occasionally, but that first 6 months, of course you're traveling. He's traveling with a team. Not that it would matter there's females on the team, because really there's females everywhere. So it wouldn't. But for me to sit there from Monday through Friday, I would be sick to my stomach by Friday because I didn't want to be the one that was checking up on him. I didn't want, and that was difficult for me. And I think too, the fact that I had given up my identity, I didn't really know what to do. Like when I was with my kids, I was the mom. And when I was with you, I was the girlfriend. And when I was, but then you stick me in that house by myself. And I was like, I'd always based, you know, what hat I was wearing with the people around me. So when I had to figure stuff out myself, I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know what made me happy. I didn't know. And I did figure out a lot of that. So at that 6 months, probably, even though I hated every minute of it, it probably was.
Yeah, and every weekend I came home, it just got better. Mm-hmm. You were just like, you know, these crazy thoughts that I had, you know, they vanished when I got home. And again, I was an open book. And so, you know.
But it's that overthinking thing.
Yeah.
You overthink it to stay out of trouble. You overthink to stay one step ahead because you don't want to be hurt. I'd spin myself into circles when you were gone. But what were the things that you would have never anticipated about me just by talking to me on the phone and seeing me every weekend? What things did you see, you know, after I moved in that were surprising to you?
I think the biggest thing was your feeling of just not good enough. You know, your self-esteem was below sea level. And you were the hottest thing to me. And so it was like this polar opposite thing. Here I am looking at the perfect person, and I'm saying physically, and you were just always picking yourself apart, and you just had low self-esteem. I mean, you'd been crushed, because by this time,
which was not attractive to you, by the way. But
not
you,
at all.
But you didn't realize it was as bad as it was.
No, I had no idea. But, you know, by the time you moved in, I understood why you felt like that, because every day you were crushed. And so, you know, every day, and this was not a chore for me. This is not some task list that I checked the box every day I got up. You know, I told you every day how freaking gorgeous you were. And anytime you said something negative, if I was to get upset, from my definition of getting upset, it was when you would bash yourself. And that would irk me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you are not seeing what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think part of that too is you get to where you reject even compliments.
You were terrible.
I really like your shirt. Oh, thanks. I got it at Goodwill. Or, you know, your hair looks great today. Oh, thanks. It hasn't been washed in 5 days. Like, so when you'd give me a compliment, I was so uncomfortable because here, he thinks I'm the hottest thing when for the last however many years, I was a horrible wife and I was this and I was that and my hair was the wrong color. And if you got fat, this and, you know, all of that. So it was almost like, I definitely need to say this. It was almost like I was overanalyzing, because I would even think, okay, how come he's being so nice? What does he want? Because he's being so complimentary. because I was always anticipating how to keep myself safe. So when you'd say something like that, I'd be like, okay, is he just saying that because he's going to go meet somebody else at the bar? I just made that up. I don't remember actually saying that, but yeah, the for me to believe that you thought that about me, I couldn't even wrap my head around that, really.
I know. Trust me.
Oh, and you guys, the other thing was, I grew up in Montana, and you'll laugh. I might have said this before. So I grew up in a little Christian community. My grandpa was a preacher. My dad was a lay preacher and a dairy farmer. And I saw the same people for the first 18 years of my life. And we all went to the same church. And we all went to the same school. And, you know, the school was supported by the old Dutchmen. So we couldn't dance. And the stuff that this man exposed me to, not on a bad level, not like on a sinful level, because we're not going to talk about that on the podcast.
Deal.
No, I'm just saying the fun and the activity and the laughter and the just free spirit.
Well, how many firsts?
Oh my gosh.
How many firsts?
He for a while was counting how many firsts he exposed me to. Now we're 15 years in and every day there's still that was a first. I'm like, yeah, I grew up under a rock, I guess. But it was just, there was so much life in you. Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, I don't know, can we go on to the next one that I
do? You can do whatever.
Okay. So, you know, I told you I got to date a little bit, obviously, before I met you. And when you're middle-aged, you know, the odds.
Who's middle-aged?
Well, then, you know what I mean?
Then. So what am I now? Do you guys see what I've been up with?
Well, you know what I mean,
yes,
right? So when we met, you were.
Well, I'll just tell you guys this. My former was 6 years older than me, and Jeremy's almost 6 years younger than me. So that was a huge hurdle for me too, to be dating a younger guy.
Yeah, but how old were you?
I was 36.
And I was 30. Mm-hmm. 30 or, okay. 30 or 32.
32, I think.
Yeah, 32. 4 years. You got 4 years. Yeah. Sorry about that. Anyway, so when I was dating, you know, you a lot of the gals that I met, if they'd never been married and obviously had no kids, you think to yourself, what is wrong with this person? There's something wrong with this person.
Oh, because
person.
They've never been married.
Right. At that age, mm-hmm. It's like there's a reason for that, right? And so I got to experience exactly why these people have never been married or whatever. Yeah,
and not that everybody has a reason why they're not married, but
well,
but the ones that you were dating, there was definitely a reason.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I found out very quickly. But then, you know, I was meeting gals that were divorced and had kids or what have you. And the blended thing scared me to death. To death. Oh. Because the way they parent is, you know, totally, it's different, or we're, you know, nobody parents the same. And sort of in this day and age, you know, when you're dating a mother and she flat out looks at you in the face and says, you will always be second to my kids. They're always going to come first. And you're just getting pounded with, you're always going to be number two, no matter what you do, they're always going to come first. And that was a huge turnoff for me.
Yeah.
I wanted to be number one. Why can't we all be number one? You know?
And yeah. I think I have experienced that a lot with my clients. And I honestly think, I don't know that they necessarily mean that. Like if, no, I don't know.
I get the sentiment.
Yeah. I don't know the women that you were dating, but like in my experience, I would definitely not want somebody to invade my life and my kids without knowing. And so if you were only dating them for a brief amount of time, that was just the first thing to protect themselves. It's not necessarily that.
Could absolutely be true. I mean,
but that was a turnoff.
It was a turnoff for me. You know, never knowing, like you have a date planned, you know, and it's well in advance, and you know, it plans go astray because of the kids or what have you. And it's, you know, it would just get really tough. You get really tough. Because I was an every other weekend dad and I knew my schedule. Yeah,
so you were basically single. And so it was frustrating when other people weren't.
Right. And then, you get to meet the kids or whatever. And maybe they're in that point where they're just super disrespectful.
They're somebody else's kid.
They're somebody else's. You're exactly right. And I struggled. I really, really struggled with that. And, you know, the way I parented my kid was different than them. And so it just wasn't sustainable. So me and you going into this blended thing was a very scary thing for me.
Yeah. And, you know, I think they were all into rodeo. They were all into horses.
Yeah, which was all good and everything, especially they, you know, I rodeoed. So they had a level of, I think, respect and.
Yeah. And we weren't merging two lives that were complete. I mean,
correct.
Not lives, but we weren't merging two lifestyles that were completely different.
Yeah. No, you're right. And so I think that helped a lot.
Yeah. Listen to how we're talking about it like it was easy.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, when you talk about the struggles that I did not anticipate was the kiddos and the former and the real struggles around that and how that manipulation just all went from you to 100% them. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I didn't have my struggles with mine, but it didn't hold a candle to what that whole thing was about.
Yeah.
And you just never knew.
Right. What he's kind of talking about is, if you've been an avid listener, you guys know what direction I come from, but, you know, the toxic personality as they stand are very insecure. And again, they didn't ask to be like that. There was something that made them like that, a diagnosis and addiction, a traumatic upbringing, or whatever it was, made them very insecure in themselves. Most of us can take the time to put energy into our own lives. You know, you work out, you take care of yourself, you further your career. That's what makes us feel secure. And this is my opinion, but the toxic personality does not have the ability to do that. So they have to have people in their life to supply them with the things that they need to feel secure. So what I didn't realize is the reason I was in the life of my former was because I was supplying him with the things that made him feel secure, which are things like control and power and attention and, you know, the whole emotional reaction thing. And the what Jeremy is talking about is I removed myself and thinking that a parent would continue to parent. He basically moved the girls right into my position, and the power and control and manipulation just transferred straight to them. And that was hard. And then, of course, he's trying to support me being a mom without my kids. And I didn't know this until just recently, but he told my kids that I wrote him a letter that said I wanted my kids out of my life. And then he, you know, he blocked me from their phone, which, I mean, that's just the, but he was definitely trying to make the kids think that I absolutely ditched them. So I'm trying to struggle with that. You're, you know, trying to support me in that. I have had clients that have wanted to leave their kids, and I have to say we've worked through it, and I haven't had anybody that has had to do that.
Well, so you say that, and yes, that step did occur, but your girls just have this unbelievable love for you. And I knew that there was no way they were going to be away from mom. I knew that. I just, you know, in our scenario, it just was really kind of odd, but it seemed like there for a while, we always had one.
Well, we had one, or they would stay until they couldn't stand it anymore. And you know, the thing that you always told me too is make sure that they know that you love them and that there's nothing that they can do that will make you stop loving them. And they can call you anytime they need you, and you'll always be there. And really, that's the only thing I could do. And I didn't believe him. I'm like, yeah, right. I'm never going to see my kids again. And that was 100% true, because when there was an emergency or the shit hit the fan, you know, they'd borrow somebody else's phone or.
Well, you're the rock. We were the rock. I'll put myself in there. We were the constant rock. Mm-hmm. We never wavered.
Yeah.
And that provided a sense of comfort for them. And so, yeah, you know, they wanted to go to dad's because he bribed the living hell out of them to, you know, and it seemed when they're young, that, you know, they're chasing whatever they're chasing, and they bought into that until, you know, they were tricked.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, I had to, when I was there, I tried to protect them. I made excuses for his behavior. Oh, your dad loves you. Oh, he just had a bad day, you know, and this was not my initial reason for leaving. But, you know, as time progressed, I thought they really have to see his true colors, because me or anybody else just telling them is no different than my mom and dad wanting me to leave. You know, I knew that they were not going to make a decision on that relationship until they had the information that they needed. And for me to just know the stuff that they were going through, I just kept thinking, okay, but when they're 18, they'll be able to make the decision. And if we hide it and cover it up, and they've pretty much saw everything they needed to see. And one of them doesn't talk to him, and the other one does very,
they just needed to do it 7 to 10 times a piece.
Yeah, it was. And that was the part that was hard for you, is because, you know, they would come, one of them would come back because it was too bad with their dad. And I would be so excited, mm-hmm. and I would be so happy. And when I think about my actions though, when they would come back, I really catered to them just like I catered to him, because I didn't want him to be mad, and I didn't want him to leave, and I didn't want to, you know, and that didn't help him. And then, you know, they'd be down for 3 or 4 weeks and they'd leave. And then you were left with this awful puddle of bawling mess because, oh, my kids left again. That was,
yeah. Well, one of them felt the need to sneak out every time. And literally out her bedroom window.
Because she felt guilty.
She did. But we finally were just like, you know, hey, kiddo, you don't have to do that. Just let us know. We'll help you.
Yeah, we'll help you.
You know, just know that at some point this revolving door is going to close.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you when that'll be.
Not that you can't come and visit, but this back and forth, we're going to live here, we're going to live there.
Right.
And I think the reason you did that is it just tore me apart.
Absolutely.
And which is why she would sneak out, because so I'd get up in the morning and she wouldn't be there. And then, and I think the those of you who have kids, you kind of have to realize too, like this was the only dad they had. Now, Jeremy has become very important in their lives, but when they didn't really have that bond then. And
well, I was a friend. I had my boundaries.
Yeah.
And they knew that. Mm-hmm. And we held them accountable.
And actually they did, they held boundaries with you much better than me, because they had learned to run over top of me just like he did. Mm-hmm.
But it was actually a great relationship. I mean, with both your girls. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they were down, we had boundaries, but we had a lot of great times.
Yeah.
It was just, they struggled with the calmness of the household.
Yes. And I think the other thing that they struggled with is, and I have, talked to a lot of people about this. They knew we were always going to be there no matter what. I had to realize the kids were still in it. I was out of it. So I would put myself back. I didn't do this then. I do it in retrospect. Okay. But they're acting exactly like I did when I was in it. I would rather have somebody who loved me unconditionally upset at me than to have him upset. And if he was upset or making them feel guilty or threatening them with something, that was a draw to them, because they were frightened. And they knew if they left me, the next time they come back, mom's as solid as she always has been.
And you know what though, Heidi, if you think about it, I mean, I don't know how many times it happened. It was a lot.
I remember you saying, good grief, I just get the blood wiped off your back and here comes another backstab. It was so devastating for me.
Yeah, it was tough. And I had to let go of the resentment, et cetera, et cetera. But we never, ever bribed them. Would you say that you went over the top with stuff when they were there?
Not making them,
but it was
not mad at me.
It was not in a materialistic way. It was genuine in the fact that,
I felt it for sure.
You valued the time you had with them,
and then poof, they were gone.
Well, true, but my point is that this wasn't a competition. Hey, you want calm? You want peace?
It wasn't a competition.
You want to find your way? Come here.
Yeah.
You want to go into drama fest, craziness, whatever that whole thing is? Have at it.
Yep. And it made me feel really bad for my mom, because it was the same thing I did. And I tell everybody, you're not going to leave until you're ready to leave.
Right.
And that's basically what it was with the girls too. And I left when they were 11 and 13. And when they were 17 and 19, we got the call and they came back.
Both of them. Yeah. And mine.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to say that. So we didn't have kids. So we moved to the country to a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom. And 6 months later, all three of them were living with us full time. So we had 3 teenage girls in a 2-bedroom, 1-bath for almost 2 years.
Yeah. And I never, people ask me all the time, how'd you do it? It's all about those boundaries, and they respected them. And I don't remember one knockout, dragout fight. I mean, there was always some tensions, but we overall had a freaking blast.
Yes. And we had tensions because we had 3 hormonal teenagers.
Right.
And one of his boundaries, it was hysterical the way these girls would listen to him. Okay, he has a pet peeve. Too many bottles in the shower. Okay, well, when you have 4 women living in the house, you're going to have a lot of bottles in the shower. And he only had to say it twice. And each one of them went to the barn and they got a bucket.
Yep.
And they kept all their shower stuff in a bucket. And when they came to the shower, they would take their bucket.
Yep.
The kids thing was hard. In the end, it's made my kids not dependent on anybody. I think, I mean, they struggle with the triggers and the same stuff I do, but.
Yeah, but they're out of the house doing their thing.
Yes, all three of our kids are
doing their thing.
Are doing their thing, and they're doing great. But
and that's a measure of success, though.
Yeah,
you know.
But
regardless of what they went through, and it's not like they don't have struggles today, from what they went through. Okay, and they're going to have those until probably they die, and it's going to rear its ugly head when they get into a relationship and how they respond, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And they'll have to figure that out. But it's not that they don't have a great coach.
Yeah. If I remember, I'm a coach and not a mom.
Yeah.